Hi, this is Carrie, and this is the first podcast that is going to correlate with the chronic neurological problems PowerPoint that you have there within the course. So if you want to follow along, that's great. This first section, we're going to talk about headaches and the different forms of headaches and the treatment for that. So let's start with the first slide here. That just shows in this slide a diagram of the three different types of headaches that we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about a tension headache, a migraine headache, as well as a cluster headache. The headache is probably the most common form of pain experienced by human beings. We all have them, and we all have them to varying degrees and different types of headaches. They're classified as primary or secondary. Primary is when it is not caused by another medical condition. Example could be dehydration, head injury, meningitis. So if you just have a headache and you're not quite sure why, that's when it's considered a primary. It's classified then as well after that as a type of a tension headache, a migraine headache, or a cluster headache if it is a primary headache. If it is a secondary headache, then we're going to look for the cause, and if we treat the cause, the headache should go away. So characteristics of the primary headache, again, are shown there in the table. Patients, we can, as patients and people who get headaches, we actually can experience many different types of headaches. We don't just have one type. History and neurological exam are key diagnostic tools to determine the type of headache that the patient has. And we're going to spend some time with each of these different types of headaches. The next slides on site. PowerPoint page 3 is going to talk briefly about each one. A tension headache is often described as a feeling of a weight in or on the head or a band squeezing around the head. It is usually mild to moderate intensity. It usually is not aggravated by physical activity, and it can last from minutes to days. The migraine headache is generally described as an intense throbbing or pounding pain that involves one temple. The pain usually is unilateral, so it's usually on one side of the head, but occasionally it can be found on both sides. This headache will last for a few hours to days, and the migraine headache can really be debilitating. They can have nausea and vomiting, photophobia. They like the dark room, little senses. That they use the better. Everything can augment the pain or make it worse, even movement. Anytime, sometimes when they have a migraine headache and they move or roll over in bed, if it is severe enough, that can cause them to vomit. So also with migraine headaches, they may have an aura or they may not have an aura. And when we talk about migraines, we'll talk about that a little bit more as well. The cluster headache pain is found generally around, in and around one eye, and is often described as sharp, penetrating, or burning. And this usually only lasts a few minutes or up to about 3 hours. So it's not as severe as the migraine. Going to the next slide, let's just focus on some tension headaches. This is the most common type of headache that's out there. Usually it's a bilateral location, so on both sides, hemispheres of the brain, and again, that has that pressing or tightening quality. Mechanisms in all patients with tension type headache has a neurovascular factors similar to those involved with the migraine headaches. So neuronal sensitivity and pain facilitation are usually not seen. They're abnormal, but muscle contraction is usually there. So they're going to see some muscle tightening in response to the pain that the patient is experiencing. If a tension headache is present during a physical exam, increased resistance to passive movement of the head and tenderness of the head and neck may be present. So they may actually see that muscle tightening. As we're looking to diagnose it, we have to take a careful history. Again, they may do an electromyography, which is a testing for muscle tension. Again, that is going to reveal sustained contraction of the neck, scalp, or facial muscles. It may not show increased tension even when the test is done during the headache. So it may or may not be indicative, but they probably are going to test it to find out for sure. I mean, as a patient, we all know if we're tight, if the pain that we're having causes our muscles to tighten and spasm, and that's a pretty common occurrence. Let's talk a little bit now about a migraine headache. Migraine headaches recur. Once you've had one migraine headache, chances are good you're going to have another one. It's characterized by unilateral or bilateral throbbing pain. There are usually triggering events or factors that occur to bring on a migraine headache. It may be different smells, noises, flashing lights. As we look at the next slide, we'll see a full list of those. But just know a migraine is usually triggered by something. Even a stressful event can be a trigger. They're generally genetic, so there'll be a strong family history. The signs and symptoms that the patient is going to experience is also associated with neurological and autoimmune nervous system function. Generally, the most common age of onset for a migraine is between 20 and 30 years of age. So right where you're at is when they start to see migraines affecting people. They can affect as many as 17% of females and 6% of males in the United States. Some of the risk factors we see for migraine include a family history, low level of education or low socioeconomic level, high workload, and frequent tension headaches. So all those things are things we need to consider. So on the next slide, it talks about the etiology and pathophysiology. Again, evidence suggests that we have vascular, muscle, and biochemical factors involved with a migraine headache, even though the exact cause is unknown. Migraines are usually associated with a seizure disorder, Tourette syndrome, ischemic stroke, asthma, depression, anxiety. Those all tend to run together with a migraine headache. Sometimes migraine headaches can be preceded by an aura, and prodrome may precede by days or hours. And an aura is associated with a wave of oligemia beginning with occipital lobe and spreading forward. And on the next slide, we'll talk about a little bit more what the aura is and what people experience with those. Now let's talk a little bit about triggers, things that can bring it on. There's a list there on your slide that talk about foods, hormonal fluctuations. So women, if you're PMS, as we go through our monthly hormonal changes, that may bring it on. Head trauma, physical exertion, fatigue, stress. Hopefully none of you get any migraine headaches here as you're studying for finals. Also different medications that we give patients can set off the migraine headache. Some of those food triggers listed there, or the list of food you may add, includes chocolate, cheese, oranges, tomatoes, onions, monosodium glutamate, and that is an additive to a lot of foods, aspartame, which is your artificial sweetener found in a lot of your soda drinks, or any diet drink for that matter, red wine, and alcohol. So let's now look at the division of migraine headaches. It's divided into five categories. It's really not important for you at this point to know those five categories, but let's look at the two important factors. You have a migraine with an aura and a migraine without an aura. A migraine without the aura is the most common, but I want to talk about the migraine with the aura. It actually only occurs in about 10% of migraine headache episodes. An aura is a complex of neurological symptoms characterized by visual changes, which can include bright lights, patchy blindness, visual distortions, possibly seeing zigzag lines. They will have sensory disturbances, so they may hear voices or sounds that do not exist. They may smell something that maybe isn't there as well. And they could also have some motor difficulties or changes, including weakness, paralysis, feeling that their limbs are moving. So basically, they can have almost what we think of as an out-of-body experience, where they're seeing and doing these things for a brief period of time. It generally lasts 10 to 30 minutes before the start of a headache, and that's about all they have. But then they just have, it's like they're out of body, and they're seeing and hearing and smelling things that are not there. So if we look at the next slide, we're talking about signs and symptoms of the migraine headache. Again, the symptoms we may see include generalized edema, irritability, pallor, nausea, vomiting, and sweating. During the headache, some patients may hibernate, and that is pretty common, where they're going to stay in their room. They're not going to want to do anything or be with anyone else. Any stimulation at all can make them more sick. So the headache generally is described as steady throbbing pain that matches your pulse. So they'll feel like their heart is beating in their head. Pain, again, is usually unilateral, but it can actually switch and move around in the head and switch to the other side. Symptoms may worsen over time, and the severity, again, is worse. Not all migraines are disabling, but those are the ones, the disabling ones are usually the ones we see that come to the hospital or the clinic. No specific lab or diagnostic tests are used if we think about how we diagnose this. Really, we look at their patient's history, their objective and subjective data that they present to us, and we make rulings based on that. Neurological and diagnostic exams generally are normal. They don't have any abnormal blood work or lab work. If they would do an EEG, that would become normal, and they wouldn't see anything on that. There's also the IHS criteria are used as a clinical basis, and IHS stands for International Headache Society. So they have diagnoses made, and they have the different headache levels written there and how to diagnose them. Neuroimaging techniques, again, are not needed because nothing is generally abnormal on those. So let's now move on to cluster headaches. This is a very rare form of headache. It occurs in less than 0.1% of the population. Generally, it's characterized by repeated headaches that occur for weeks or months at a time, followed by periods of remission. One of the most severe forms of head pain, though, that we can see. So the trigeminal nerve is implicated as the production of the pain source. The cluster headache also involves dysfunction of the intracranial blood vessels, the sympathetic nervous system, and pain modulation systems. Because of the circadian rhythmicity of the headaches, the hypothalamus is believed to also play a role. So if we look at the signs and symptoms of what a cluster headache looks like, it's usually pretty sharp, stabbing pain. Intense pain typically lasts a few minutes up to 3 hours. Again, they can occur as often as 8 times a day, so they can be very debilitating in that aspect. These headaches usually occur at the same time each day during the same seasons of the year. So as we're looking at history of headaches, that is an important concept to consider. Alcohol is the only dietary trigger. Strong odors and napping are also triggers that you may see. If we're looking back up at the slide, some other signs and symptoms that you might see for a cluster headache include swelling around the eyes, increased tearing of the eyes, tear production, facial flushing or pallor, rhinitis, constriction of the pupil. So as you can see, it's all generally around the eye areas where we're going to see these signs. During the headache, the patient is agitated and restless. And again, typically they last daily for 2 weeks up to 3 months, and then they can go into remission for months or years and not have them for quite a while. So even treating these can become more of an issue. Cluster headaches diagnostics. This is going to sound as similar as the other ones. We're going to base it basically on history and exam, past headache history. There really are no diagnostic tests specific for a cluster headache as well. Headache diaries are helpful, and you may see those used. We'll have them keep track of when their headaches are, the type of pain, the symptoms that they experience, and if there's anything they do that makes the pain better. So those can be very helpful in just looking at their headache history. They can do a CT, MRI, MRA to rule out any aneurysm, tumor, or infection. So again, they may do it to rule out some primary cause for this headache, thinking that it might be secondary. But if those come back negative, really there is not much we can do. I want you to think about, too, sometimes when we're talking about neurological disorders, we'll talk about the lumbar puncture. Again, that may be used to rule out other disorders that can cause some similar symptoms, but a lumbar puncture is not something that medical staff is going to jump to do quickly. Anytime we have a head injury or a headache, the lumbar puncture is going to be one of the last things we do. We only jump to a lumbar puncture first as a first form of diagnosis if we're thinking of a meningitis possible situation. On the next slide, we talk a little bit about headaches, other types of headaches at slide 13. Again, can be first symptom of a more serious illness. So we have to truly look at what is the cause of the headache, what is the onset of the headache, is it the first time they've had a headache or not, because it could be a sign of a more serious injury as well. We just got through talking about intracranial pressure and various head injuries, and the one sign we saw with all of those as well was headache. So it does need to be evaluated to rule out anything more serious. All right, so what are we going to do about a headache? We're going to look at the different collaborative care and management here. If no systemic underlying disease is found, therapy is directed toward functional type of headaches. So we want to keep them as moving and as active as possible because there's not a whole lot we can do. So we really are going to look at a drug therapy. Although besides drugs, they can also have, you know, do yoga, relaxation techniques, cognitive behavioral therapy, biofeedback. There are some herbal medicines out there that our new patients are trying. So there's different things that patients will do to try to relieve headaches. Acupuncture is another new one that's out there, and you guys may know a lot more about that than I do. So let's talk about some of the drug therapy that we're going to use. We're going to start with the drug therapy for attention headache. Generally, we're just going to use a non-opioid analgesic. So something over the counter, such as an NSAID, an ibuprofen, Tylenol, sometimes will work, naproxen. Sometimes they're in combination with a sedative or a muscle relaxant. Flexoril is a muscle relaxant that is used frequently. A tranquilizer, or even they may do a combination med that includes like an NSAID and codeine. So you'll see those as well. For migraine headaches, the goal of an acute migraine attack is to terminate or reduce any symptoms that might be out there. So you can have mild to moderate headache, can be obtained relief with aspirin or acetaminophen. If it is a severe migraine headache where it is debilitating, they do not want to be out in public, they don't want to see, have lights, sounds, they're vomiting with movement, those types of things, they're going to be given a medication. Generally, the one we're going to start, the medications are the triptans that are going to be the first line that we use. An example of a triptan is sumatriptan, which is also known as Imitrex. This is available in many forms, oral, sub-Q, and a nasal spray. Some patients do better to one triptan than to others, so again, we need to be knowledgeable about all of them, but as for testing purposes, Imitrex is the main one to think about with migraines. This medication should be taken at the first symptom of a migraine headache. So the first, if they have an aura or if they're experiencing any changes, this needs to be taken immediately to be effective. Combination drugs are out there because you can have an Imitrex and a naproxen known as Trexamet. That combines a triptan with an anti-inflammatory drug, and we're seeing more and more combination medications out there, and they can be very effective. These medications generally affect selected serotonin receptors, how they work, and they reduce the neurogenic inflammation of the cerebral vessels, and they produce some of the vasoconstriction needed to decrease that inflammation and take some of that added pressure off of the brain itself. Other drug therapy besides the Imitrex, they also can take some medications to help prevent a headache before it comes on. They can use some anti-seizure meds. There are three of them actually on this list. Topiramate, also known as Topamax, can be used. This is an anti-seizure med. Valproic acid, Depakote, can be used. That's an anti-seizure medication. Valproic acid is actually listed again lower on the right up from the bottom. Divalproex is also another name for valproic acid and Depakote. I know medications can be so confusing, especially when we call them by 2, 3, 4 names. So I apologize for that confusion. But it's very important that anti-seizure medications, they can work. They generally must be used for about 2 to 3 months to determine if it's going to be effective or not. Not all patients are going to become pain-free with this medication. And it's very important that once patients start an anti-seizure medication, that they do not stop without tapering, as this can actually bring on a seizure, and that's not something we want to do. And when we talk about epilepsy and the seizure disorder later in this PowerPoint, we will talk more about that as well. They can use some beta blockers if we decrease blood pressure, and we can do that. Some beta blockers, your Inderol, propranolol, your calcium channel blockers, such as verapamil, can be used. Sometimes they will also see selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, which are antidepressants, such as Prozac. Those also can be used to help prevent the onset of a migraine headache. Newer treatment that we see actually is Botox. This has been used in a prophylactic treatment of chronic daily headaches and migraines that did not respond to other medications. It can take 2 to 3 months of injections in the scalp and temple before the frequency and severity of migraine headaches are lessened. So, interesting concept, but it appears to be working. All right, let's talk about cluster headache drug therapy for that. Drug therapy not as useful as for the other headaches. Again, they may include your verapamil. We're going to look at your calcium channel blocker with that, some lithium, ergotamine. You're going to use anti-seizure meds, some NSAIDs. They're going to basically almost try some of the same things we've already talked about just to try to help them work. Acute treatment also can be used with 100% oxygen delivered at a rate of 6 to 8 liters per minute for 10 to 20 minutes. This is newer research that has been shown to be effective, although the drawback for that is not everybody has 100% oxygen within their home for the treatment of this. They would need to come into a healthcare facility to receive this. So that's something we're seeing, but again, has not been readily accepted within the home. Imitrex. Sumatriptan, that's the other name for Imitrex, has been effective for cluster headaches as well. They also have invasive nerve blocks and ablation neurosurgical procedures that have been used for refractory cluster headaches, as well as deep brain stimulation. So basically what that means is they try to go in and find the spot of the headache and cauterize it or change that neural impulse within the brain. So they're doing some really cool things, but anytime we're doing any surgery within the brain, it definitely comes with some major risks. So in order to do that, the cluster headache itself would have to be pretty debilitating. So as we turn to the next slide, slide 18, we're looking at nursing management. Again, your health history is going to be the biggest thing we can do. Make sure it's very thorough and complete with objective, subjective data, as well as a very thorough history. So look for seizures, cancer, stroke, trauma, asthma, or allergies, mental illness, stress, menstruation. Are they correlating with the menstrual cycles? Exercise, food, bright lights, noxious stimuli. What other medications are they on? What other surgeries or treatments? Again, keeping the diary of their headache is going to be very important to make the proper diagnosis. And the list there of what you would include on the diary is on your slide. Again, the next slide talks about objective data. Do they have anxiety or apprehension with them? Diaphoresis, pallor, unilateral flushing of the cheeks, edema, conjunctivitis. So what are we seeing? And the hard part is they may not actually have an appointment or be seen when they have their headache. And if they do not present when they're having their headache, sometimes it's hard for us to make those objective data assessments. Diagnoses should make sense to us. Pain, if they're having a headache, anxiety and hopelessness. If it lasts for long periods of times or days and they're nauseated and vomiting, we can have dehydration or nutritional deficits there as well. But generally, those are not the first ones we jump to. So planning, again, we want to plan to help the patient be pain-free and to relieve the headaches the best we can, whether that be through diet, exercise, and biofeedback changes, or if we're going to start a medication, the proper education for having them take their medications, and or it may even be surgery if that's the option. So there are many different things to think about. We need to make sure that we're doing our best to have the patient experience increased comfort and reduced anxiety. They need to understand what triggers their headaches, and then once they have that trigger, what works most effectively for them. We need to help them figure out positive coping strategies and experience an increased quality of life. So some things that we can, again, reiterate here: daily exercise, periods of rest, socialization to help reduce recurrence should be encouraged. Anything we can do to relieve stress is there: relaxation, meditation, yoga, self-hypnosis, meditation, massage. Patients can make written notes of medications to prevent accidental overdose of medications. Sometimes when you have a headache, they forgot what they've taken and when they've taken it. So having them write it down can be very helpful. Dietary counseling may be needed for food triggers. As always, avoid smoking and smoking exposure and other environmental triggers, as well as alcohol consumption. So basically, the most effective therapy may actually be to help patients examine their lifestyle, recognize stressful situations, and learn to cope with them more appropriately. Help the patient identify precipitating factors and help the patient develop ways to avoid them. And that wraps up our discussion on headaches. The next podcast will be on seizure disorders. If you have any questions, please ask.